Thanks for listening to the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon on Fox Sports Radio.
Some huge football news today. Number one, we now know when it's going to be Tua time. Tua Tagovailoa will start for the Dolphins when they return from the bye week against the LA Rams. ESPN's Adam Schefter reporting this earlier today. Dolphins go on the bye right now, and so now Tua's got 2 weeks to be ready for his NFL, his first NFL start. Of course, he played a little bit against the Jets on Sunday and looked okay, and now they're ready to make the move. Now, this would be really weird, right? This normally would be a really weird time to say, why are you going to Tua? Ryan Fitzpatrick is playing fantastic. He's got a great quarterback rating. The Dolphins are winning. I mean, you're competing. You're only a game out of first place in the AFC. What are you doing? But I guarantee you this, Mike. I guarantee you this. I would push all my chips to the middle that this was the plan all along. And by that, I mean they said, okay, Tua, this is what's going to happen. Ryan, this is what's going to happen. We've not had a great preseason to be able to figure things out and get reps. Ryan, you are going to start until the bye week. And then Tua's going to take over then. I guarantee you that's what it was. Because nothing else makes sense. Why make the change now? Fitzpatrick is playing well. You're winning games. He's still the good Ryan Fitzpatrick. And clearly, he'll turn back into Ryan Fitzpatrick at some point. But he's been playing really well. But there's no way this wasn't the plan from the beginning of the season that when we get to this point, no matter what's going on, we're going to Tua. Now, if the Dolphins were 6-0, maybe they would rethink it. But you know what? 3-3, we want to see Tua. The fans want to see Tua. This is why we drafted him. He's ready after watching, the first six games, got his first little taste, has 2 weeks to get ready. And he's going to have nightmares about Aaron Donald for the next 2 weeks, but yes, that's okay. But I guarantee you this was the plan from the beginning of the season. When we get to the bye, Tua takes over, regardless as to what's going on. Because you can't tell me there's any other team that would make a move like this unless this wasn't really predetermined a long time ago.
Well, it's the plan. It's also the, all right, you want to start pushing towards the future, right? Because when I saw the news this morning, I was out for the walk with the dog. I'm finishing up, and, I always go for a walk with, some of the parents talking about the kids' challenges with school, some of the laughs, whatever. And you get out and about, talk some Dodger baseball, all that good stuff. And then I flipped the browser for the stretcher on. It's like, wait a minute, how dare you? And someone was passing me, and you're like, what? I was like, no. They bench Ryan Fitzpatrick in Miami. They had no idea who Ryan Fitzpatrick was and kept walking. But it was that momentary, man, he got jobbed because he's played really well. They're 3-3, all of these things. But whatever 2020 is, that's not your end game, right? So just getting a wild card berth would be huge. But you also still want to see what the kid is going forward, right? You know what Ryan Fitzpatrick is. Hell, he might get traded to Dallas or somewhere before it's all said and done in this.
Oh,
he's been a great
mentor,
a great teammate. You saw the reaction, the video that was shown a billion times when Tua went in, how much of a cheerleader he was on the sideline for him. So, I mean, there's just a cool mentorship thing going on there. I was just kind of hoping we'd get to see Fitzpatrick, thinking about Big Ten football now.
That's okay. I know you're ready for Pat Fitzgerald, buddy.
Yeah, no, well, the purple shorts are drying right now, so being ready for Saturday. But the idea that Fitzpatrick, I wanted to see it go as far as it could, right, before it derailed. And maybe they just decided, as you said, that was the plan as long as he didn't have any medical setbacks and he'd shown some development in practice. Got onto the field, and now they make the change, and we'll see what they have, because that division is kind of up for grabs. I think Buffalo's still a pretty good team, even though everybody's abandoned the Josh Allen bandwagon as quickly as they came out. He had a bad 6 days on national television.
Yeah, but he was the MVP after week two. It was Josh Allen was going to win the MVP.
Did we
Mike?
Not talk
Everybody
about this?
Said
Everybody's
be the
been
MVP.
The MVP.
Oh my
Sam
goodness.
Darnold with the MVP for about two series.
He's trash.
What two series was he the MVP
for? All right, I'm lying. I was trying to make you feel better about life by including the Jets.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? When he ran for that 50-yard touchdown against the Broncos, that was when he was the MVP.
And then he got obliterated the next time he tried to run the ball. But
yes, okay, that's it. Perfect.
But yeah, so look, the MVP race, we've joked about it all the time, is every week everybody wants to just get on board that bandwagon and see what they can come up with for hot take nonsense. And it's good. It keeps the machine running. That's what it's all about. In this particular case, it's now you've seen Joe Burrow and he's taken a beating, but he keeps getting up and he's looked pretty good. He and T. Higgins have something working there in Cincinnati, and eventually that's your foundation for what that team becomes. And obviously Justin Herbert, when you've got Bruce Arians and other coaches going to Anthony Lynn, you got your guy. You got your guy, right? So you're pushed a little bit there to see, well, what's your prized rookie got in the tank, and especially when he still has matchups against the rest of that division coming up.
Well, and also that pushed ahead the timeline of, all right, seeing Joe Burrow take over from the beginning and not look overwhelmed and look really good, that accelerates the timeline. Seeing Justin Herbert going from no reps to suddenly, hey, we're thrusting you into this game, into the starting job, and he's played really well. That has to make you think, all right, well, we got to give Tua a chance because it looks bad. If these guys go in and Tua is still not ready, because then you get to the point where people are going, oh, is Tua really not that good? Because Burrow could start right away. And
yeah, I think
Justin
it would be
Herbert
more
in.
Concern of the medical side, Jason, rather than the aptitude.
Yeah, but even so then, that's like, boy, is he ready? But what did they do? He should be ready by now. There could be many reasons. So that then you start getting to the point where, okay, if he's physically ready, if everything else, why is he not playing? But really, there's no one benches a quarterback when he's going well. All right, no one does. No, not even the Jets would bench a quarterback. Well, maybe they would this week because they could get Trevor Lawrence. So it was like, all right, wait a minute. We got to bench you, Flacco. In comes Mike White. So this is what's happening in football, is that usually you keep that guy, and especially when you are playing the way you are, when you have surprised everybody. Look, you signed everybody from the Patriots, and Brian Flores has shown that he's learned a lot. He's becoming a really good head coach. He really took his lumps last year, and now look at where they're going here. None of that makes sense unless this was predetermined. This is, okay, we're going to do it here, and we got to stick with it. I'm sure it was tough, because this is a tough-ass decision to make, to say, all right, hey, sorry, Ryan, but we got to, listen, we got Tua for a reason, and we got to sit you. And you make a good point in that if Tua comes in and Tua is okay, Ryan Fitzpatrick could be the next quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys. Ryan Fitzpatrick could be the next quarterback somewhere else. He could be. So you know what? We need a guy. We need to make sure our quarterback's room is good and Fitzpatrick is playing well. So you know what? Let's go get him. Even if he's not a guy that can come start for us like the Dallas Cowboys, he could be a guy that can come and be a number two on a team and they step in if they have to. We don't like our number two situation right now. So Fitzpatrick can come in there. He could easily be trade bait, and I wouldn't be surprised if it came to it. If Andy Dalton has a couple of other has another stinker, we could sit here and go, all right, well, the trade deadline's coming up. What are you going to do? We could go get Ryan Fitzpatrick. The guy's been loading it up for the Dolphins. The NFC East, no matter what you do the next couple of weeks, it's still in play because everybody stinks. So maybe that could be a thing. That could be a real big option for the Miami Dolphins as long as Tua gets in and it doesn't look like he's overwhelmed. Because at some point, then you'd have to create an injury for him for some reason, to sit back and say, okay, now take a look at the game after you get a little bit of experience. Like if he goes, okay, he really doesn't look like he's doing it, he's overwhelmed, well, maybe we got to sit here and hold on to Ryan Fitzpatrick. But if he comes out, would his start be after the trade deadline? His start first round might be after the trade deadline. Hang on a second. I'm trying to look at the trade
dates.
Deadline. Yeah. So, that could be, all of that could be part of it.
I was thinking just more from the idea of once you've gone away and you've finished with Ryan Fitzpatrick, he more or less could do a Mary Poppins, y'all, kind of thing. Is like he's been the mentor, he's brought them along. Because the thing with Flores, and we talked about this from the day of his hiring, the way they started to immediately shift in that building, right? Anybody that they could get value for, they got value for. They're letting him build it like a college program used to, let you build, right? 3 to 5 years, and now you've got your quarterback going forward. So if he takes his lumps and you fall short of the playoffs this year, the big goal is still you've got your guy of the future. He's got some game experience, and you propel into 2021, where in theory we have a normal offseason, normal reps, and he's got more work with Parker and Williams and Gesicki and all of these guys that have come to play really well with Fitzpatrick. I mean, that's the one thing you know is you got a pretty tight locker room, because last year they were taking their lumps, but they played hard. And they worked teams into the fourth quarter. They weren't as talented, but they still kept battling. And it's, you know, much like you watch what the Panthers are doing for Matt Rhule right now. They may be overmatched at times, but they keep playing. They keep playing hard for him, and that'll pay dividends. If only another team in the AFC East could have such a transformation. Anyway, I'll stop beating on your team.
No, it's okay, because listen, there's nothing for us. The thing is that Tua would start, his first start would be 2 days before the deadline. So if he comes out and plays well against the Rams and doesn't look like he's overwhelmed, you know, they could make that move and trade Fitzpatrick a couple of days later if they wanted to. So that conceivably could happen, because the trade deadline is on the 3rd. He would start on the 1st. So that could be a whole big thing. Like, suddenly Ryan Fitzpatrick is a valuable trade chip in the NFL from somewhere. I'll tell you, Andy Dalton, another bad game. Maybe Jerry Jones goes, well, they're sitting the Fitzpatrick kid, so let's make a call. But Steven, just try to do it on the sly, under the radar, because I want to make sure that if we get him, he shaves his beard. So
might be the smartest guy in the room.
watch out. So that's where things are right now for Tua. Like I said, I guarantee this decision was made in the preseason.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Today was a big day because we found out the Cowboys really want to be the Jets. They really are upset that the Jets are getting all this. We are the most ridiculously unrespected team in NFL. They're getting all those headlines. We want to get some too. So today, the day after the Cowboys lose to the Arizona Cardinals in such crazy fashion, 31-3, Andy Dalton wasn't very good. Cowboys weren't very good. Jerry Jones said that he's not in a feel-good mood about the Dallas Cowboys and saying how the Cowboys missed Dak on Monday night. Let's take a listen.
I don't want to be trite, but every time we've lost our starting quarterback since I've been in the NFL, but we've missed him. Now, that's trite, to say the least. And but we haven't always had a game like we had the other night. But, yes, we missed Dak. On the other hand, we can get the most out of our team, and it could be enough with Andy Dalton. I'm not in the feel-good mood, frankly, that we've been got manna from heaven, being in the East. These things have a way of evening out as we go along, and certainly the NFC East is having its challenges right now. All of that is a way of not wanting to talk about other teams. When you're not playing any better than we are, it's hard for me to look to the end game, which is to win the East, and get excited about the fact that we're better than anybody.
So there's Jerry Jones throwing Andy Dalton under the bus. And we can even win even with Andy. You know, and maybe Tony will come back and throw the football. Maybe else. Now, that would be enough. Here's Jerry Jones not taking any responsibility, because I'm going to blame the guy that's not my guy. I'm not going to blame Ezekiel Elliott for his two fumbles, because I drafted Ezekiel. I'm not going to blame
him.
Well, we're missing Dak. Obviously, I drafted Dak when nobody else, and I found Dak in the draft. So I'm going to go Andy Dalton, the backup we brought in here to play well. Now, this would normally be enough if it was, here's the Cowboys, and this is why they don't win, because here's Jerry Jones, who just loves his guys, overvalues his guys, and can't see the bigger picture. That would normally be enough, but no, there's more. According to reports earlier today, Bleach Report had them, Yard Barker, they were everywhere on the blogs today. Unidentified Cowboys players said that Mike McCarthy and the coaching staff are unprepared for the games They are unprepared for the games, and they don't know how to do their jobs. These are the quotes. They're unprepared for the games, and they're not equipped to do their jobs. I ask you this. You can say so many things. Oh, my goodness, the Cowboys. When are the Cowboys ever not a mess? I mean, when are they ever not a mess? Now, there's degrees of mess for the Cowboys. There's times when things are going well, but there's always drama. There's always something. So you can point to a lot of reasons why the Cowboys don't win. As I just said, look, Jerry Jones, you can do those boilerplate things. But when are the Cowboys ever not a mess? They always are. They always have something going on, and you can't try to win when there's always something happening that stands in the way of you guys winning. And here you go. After a bad loss, it's now the owner throws the quarterback under the bus, and the players say the coaches don't know what they're talking about. I mean, when are the Cowboys ever not dealing with something else besides football? I mean, you can't win when you deal with other stuff besides football. And here you're dealing with a coaching staff, apparently, that doesn't know what they're doing and is unprepared for the game. I mean, that's the Dallas Cowboys.
Talking about failures to adjust and critical response to situational football. So is Nolan the fall guy, right? Because they've been terrible defensively. So George Edwards, he's the senior defensive assistant. He's had great success last in Minnesota. That maybe he becomes the guy to at least try to cobble something together there. Do they get desperate and go out into the free agent market for some of those veteran players who've yet to find their way onto a team? Just see it if you can find lightning in the bottle. Throwing Dalton under the bus is ridiculous, but not surprising. Zeke gets a free pass. Fortunately, he's at least realistic and puts it all on himself and recognizes, as I did my rant yesterday, how important turnovers are to wins and losses in the National Football League. But it was good to hear everybody, something we've been saying for years, you can't escape bad management. You can't escape a bad owner. And this is one where Jerry's got to go and take a long, hard look in the mirror, because until he abdicates or there's some sort of change and, you know, wakes up on Christmas morn to realize he's lived his life wrong as an exec, nothing's changing in Dallas.
I mean, the Cowboys have just always been a mess, and that's when it's impossible to win.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
The final out did sound like
a 1-0. Swing, comebacker off the bare hand of Kelly, deflects to Seager, throws to first, out at first, and the game is over. So the Dodgers win game one of the World Series, 8-3.
Charlie Steiner, AM 570, LA Sports on the call, our Los Angeles flagship, and the Dodgers take a one-game-to-none lead. And look, we'll break this down. There's so many interesting things to get to. We have the Clayton Kershaw angle. We have the destiny play of Victor Gonzalez. But part of it is this, Mike, is that we told you going into this series, and something I believe most of my life in baseball, was I was always a good pitching beats good hitting guy, right? The big phrase is always good pitching beats good hitting and vice versa, right? That's always a big thing. But I was always a good pitching beats good hitting guy, but not in this World Series. All right, not now. The Dodgers' bats are too good. The Rays' bats are good. They're not good enough. The Dodgers' lineup is relentless and talented top to bottom, and the Rays' pitching is not all-time great. If the Rays are trotting out three really good pitchers and suddenly, okay, it's strength against strength, I would say, boy, now this is going to be something. But the Rays' pitchers, even their best, are not a group that's going to slow this lineup down. And you saw the Dodger tonight just slowly start grinding away. And this was a surgeon's precision type game, to go all John Facenda on you. They get Glasnow in trouble. They get his pitch count up. And what happens? Bellinger hits a home run in the fourth. They put up five runs in the top of the fifth. Yarbrough can't come in and stop the bleeding. Suddenly it's an 8-1 lead, and the Dodgers go on to win this, not 8-3. This is good hitting beats good pitching, and because of the way this Dodger lineup smashes. Listen, you look at the way the Dodger lineup goes, right? Cody Bellinger is a former MVP, and he is hitting down in the bottom third of the lineup. Mm-hmm. I mean, that tells you how deep this Dodgers lineup is. It also tells you Bellinger has not started hitting until the last couple of games. But all these players, you get a guy like Kike Hernandez that plays half the time. He's a guy that would hit second and play every day on any other team in Major League Baseball, or most of the teams in Major League Baseball. Jock Peterson would hit up at the top of the lineup. He would hit sixth, worst-case scenario for a team. Instead, he hits eighth on this team. Chris Taylor would hit leadoff on most teams, or second for most teams. He's hitting seventh. This is how it is for the Dodgers, because they have so many guys that can rake. It's not like you get to the bottom of the order and you go, okay, I have a bit of a break here. Like, even with the Braves, as talented as the Braves are, as good as they are, you get to the bottom of the lineup and still it's not quite as good as the top of the lineup is for Atlanta. There's no break for the Dodgers. You get down to 7, 8, 9s, okay, well, it's Peterson and Hernandez and Barnes, and then I'm back at the top. Oh, my, there is no top of the order. It's just one continuous roll-on of hitting for the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Well, that's just it. Is historically, you look at National League teams, there's two or three weak spots in the lineup. Well, that's not the case here. All the way through, you've got guys that have pop and will make you pay with a mistake. And the fact that you can lead off a guy like Mookie Betts, again, on a lot of other teams, you might be tempted to throw him in the three hole, right, for what he's able to bring you. But tonight, active on the base paths, everybody gets a taco on the efforts of Mookie Betts. So applause for him and for the Dodgers, aggressive on the base paths, because they knew Glasnow was having enough trouble finding the plate, let alone worrying about checking the runners. So it's, all right, let's get the line moving, see if we can make some plays and make the defense, you know, a little off kilter as well. But, you know, Blake Snell's your ace. Right, he is your guy on your rotation. Everybody else, just a guy. Glasnow came in, what was it, a 4.66 ERA, mm-hmm. and tonight struggled terribly with his control. He had 8 strikeouts, but also 6 walks, several of whom came around to score, including Muncy on the Bellinger home run back in the fourth.
Right, and that's the thing with the Rays, and this is why I picked the Dodgers in 6, and right now it could be less than that, I mean, because this is a case where the Dodgers lineup is so good, and the Rays don't have anybody that's great. They just have people who are good at all their starting pitching is good.
Yeah.
Is it great? No, it's not. How is their hitting? Is it good? Yeah. Is it great? No. How is their bullpen? Is it good? Yeah. Is it great? No. They're solid everywhere. And this is why they win 90 games a year, because
fundamentals. Absolutely.
Every day in Major League Baseball is like that. This is exactly what it is. But when you wind up going up against a team and you see this lineup, it doesn't compare. And so everything now is going to be on Blake Snell for game 2, because if they throw out their ace and the Dodgers win this game, it could wind up being a sweep. I mean, it could be a real short World Series after that.
Well, I played Name That Tune going to 5 games, so I'm feeling pretty good about it right now, Smith.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific. On Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Joining us now on the hotline from the World Series in Texas, you can follow him on Twitter at John Morosi, MLB Network, Fox Sports 1 Baseball Insider. JP, I figured you covering the World Series, you've already gotten your free tacos, right?
Well, the key clarification on the broadcast tonight was when Joe Buck had to make sure to tell John Smoltz that it was only one free taco, that it wasn't going to be two, because it was a double steal, which I was a little hopeful that we were going to get a second one out of it, because there was a double steal involved there. I was excited about it, but we have not yet seen the full taco delivery yet to our press lair here at the ballpark, but I will eagerly anticipate it whenever it arrives.
All right, now, there's a lot, in the words of you, a lot to unpack here. I run that line a lot here on the show, just so you know.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I think someone had said it before me that I picked it up from someone, but the fact that you associate me with it is a great honor indeed.
Yeah.
I would say a lot to unpack here. But the first thing that strikes me off this game, John, is 7th inning, the Dodgers are up 8-1, and the Rays start hitting the ball all over the park. Kershaw comes out of the game. Victor Gonzalez gets a 105-mile-an-hour line drive hit back up the middle where it just happens to be where his glove is. And instead of 2 runs coming in, it's an 8-5 game the Rays are batting. He snags the line drive. They get the double play at second base. And I saw that play, and I said, you know, that's one of those plays where you sit back and go, maybe it's just destiny for the Dodgers to win the World Series, because that's living right. And teams that win championships tend to have those plays happen for them in big situations.
You're exactly right. And I didn't have that exact thought, but when you lay it out that way, in retrospect, you're exactly right about that. And because that could change the game. And at the very least, even if the Dodgers still win, maybe that eventually becomes an 8-6 game and they've got to use their A bullpen. Now it's almost a worst-case scenario after one game for the Rays, because not only did the Dodgers win, but they did not have to throw Trinan or Jansen or Gratterol or Kolarik. They didn't have to use and dip into any of the Urias, Gonsolin, May group, which we assume will now be part of the starting contingent and probably the second and third people in the pitch tomorrow, potentially. So the Dodgers are lined up very, very nicely now. And I think a couple takeaways that I had. Number one, Kershaw was sharp. Number two, the Rays did not really adjust. And I think that was another key factor there. They had to see the slider was what Kershaw was going to, basically, for his out pitch almost every time, it seemed, with two strikes. I think seven of his eight strikeouts were on the slider. And it was very difficult, I thought, for the Rays to be able to square that pitch up all night long. So Kershaw's stuff was sharp. The Rays didn't really adjust until Kershaw was out of the game, and by then it was too little too late. And I think that the key thing is going to now be for the Rays, how do they try to jumpstart their offense at a time when, even as Joey Wendell, when I spoke with him earlier today for MLB Network, Joey made the point that their formula in the last series was pitching, defense, and Randy Arozarena. Well, if Arozarena doesn't have a great game, it's hard to see where that formula comes in. And I think, too, just a larger point that I'll make, we talked before about just how good the Dodgers are. They obviously wobbled a bit against the Braves, losing three of the first four. But since then, they've been the team that we assumed that they were going to be. And frankly, before then, against the Padres and the Brewers, they were that team. I think they're back now to being the club they've always been, very experienced. And I think that the salient point there is when a team that's got as much talent as they have is executing the little things like they are right now, they are almost impossible to beat. And they look that way tonight.
Well, and that's the thing is, right, beyond the living right double play, which, again, the calls would have been Dave Roberts should have left Clayton Kershaw in, and we would have been taking calls tonight, JP, if that inning had continued to go badly. But you saw Justin Turner with the big play. You saw, you know, defensively, you know, standing up, and that's been the hallmark. And going back to the Rays in their league championship series, everybody that wasn't a Rosarena hit under 200. So
right.
Advantage Dodgers in a big way. It's like trying to put together 15 play drives in football. Something's going to go wrong. Seems that's what the Rays are going to have to do to compete with the Dodgers, is string together a lot of hits. And we know that that's a hard way to try to win ball games.
Well, it is. And you're exactly right. I think the key thing, and I'll to back up one little bit, I think that in terms of when they remove Kershaw, I realized things got sideways for a moment after he left, when the inning got all of a sudden very busy on the bases and Gonzalez had to get ready quickly. When you're the Dodgers, I think the key thing to remember here is that Kershaw is really one of your two full-time starting pitchers. It's him and Buehler. And that's why you had to make sure, as much as you got to win game one, there was a reasonable argument to be made that trim a few outs from his outing now to make sure that he's ready to go on regular rest in game five, because you really can't use Urias. I guess you could in game four on regular rest, but tomorrow's a bullpen game. And that bullpen game also lines up for later in the series in a game six. So you have to at least know that you're going to get reliable innings from Buehler and Kershaw on the days when they're scheduled to pitch. So if you have to trim an inning here or there, I think that's a reasonable statement. I just think the Rays, they did not offensively seem like, to your point, Mike, on the football analogy, which was very apt, by the way. Well done on that. They're not able to get, you know, they're kind of a three true outcome team. We've heard John Smoltz talk about that on the broadcast tonight. It's hard for them, I think, to really build rallies. Meanwhile, the Dodgers, now I was speaking with someone on the Dodgers side earlier today about Glasnow. Glasnow is a very impressive pitcher. I thought certainly he had moments of looking dominant tonight. But the Dodgers' experience, they simply tonight, and when they're at their best, they don't do this, they don't ever go outside the zone. It seemed like they very rarely chased. And basically the word to me from one of the Dodger people was, Glasnow's really good, but to get us out, he's going to have to throw strikes because we're not going to chase tonight. And that's exactly what happened. Glasnow had to come in the zone. He walked eight guys, or walked six guys, struck out eight. But still, it was just, there was way too much traffic on the bases. He ended up having kind of a strange line, three hits and six runs, because he just walked people. And the Dodgers simply were very disciplined. It's that level of discipline that the Dodgers had and the Rays didn't. And the Rays are going to have to find it, or at least just execute in some big moments, or Rosarena is going to have another amazing series. Because if they don't, the Dodgers, they're not going to beat themselves. You saw it against the Braves. The Braves made a couple ill-timed mistakes. It cost them the series. And the Dodgers right now are a talented team executing at their peak.
You know, and that's the thing, JP, John Paul Morosi joining us from the World Series, the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon, is that, talk about football analogies. I made the football analogy before the series, is that it's like the old NFC Championship in the NFL in throughout the 80s and 90s. Whoever won the NFC Championship was going to go win the Super Bowl because they were that much better than whoever came out of the AFC. And I kind of felt that way about the playoffs. The Dodgers and Braves were the two best teams in baseball. And what we're finding out now is that the Rays are not the Braves. You know, the lineup is good, but it's not great. The pitching is good, but it's not great. The bullpen is good, but it's not great. The Dodgers have it in every category over the Rays, and you saw it everywhere tonight from the Dodgers. I feel like everything is on game two for Blake. If the Dodgers beat Blake Snell in a bullpen game, this is going to be a sweep.
Well, perhaps. I mean, Game 3, Charlie Morton, he's got a lot of experience. I would be very hesitant to write the Rays obituary too quickly, but you're exactly right about the relative strengths overall of the clubs. And I would say this, that the Dodgers just played two teams, not just the Braves, but the Padres too. They played two teams that have deeper lineups than what they're facing right now. I mean, that's not an opinion. That's, in my opinion, that's like an objective fact. I mean, like those two lineups, San Diego's lineup and the Braves lineup, are simply deeper than what the Rays have right now. Just look at the playoff numbers. Look at how much they've hit or not hit. I mean, the Rays, really, I think their team batting average in the last series was, I think, right around 200. I think their team OPS in the ALCS was about 200 points lower than what the Dodgers had in their series against Atlanta. It's just not the same depth. And that's not to say that the Rays can't make it interesting, because they can, but they're going to have some really timely hits. They're going to have to get great pitching, not good, but great pitching in the zone, quality stuff in the zone. And finally, they're going to have to play like mistake-free baseball. The Rays didn't really make mistakes tonight. They just got beat, and they got beat by a better team on the night. And I think overall, the talent level is I think in the favor of the Dodgers right now. It's you know, the analogy I've made, of course, they're both such well-run organizations, tremendous people in charge of both. Andrew Friedman, the link, of course, between the two places. The Dodgers are basically, in terms of the resources that they've got, it's like they're the premium tier of the Rays. Okay, the Rays don't have a Clayton Kershaw and they don't have a Mookie Betts because they can't afford them both. Look at their salary structure; it just doesn't fit in their payroll. So, who were two of the biggest reasons why the Dodgers won tonight? Clayton Kershaw and Mookie Betts. And look at what they make every year. I mean, the two of them together basically is the Rays payroll. So, I mean, that tells you something about the difference in resources. And I think tonight we saw that in plain view on the field.
I saw that graphic. The entire pitching staff, I think, makes $250,000 more than Kershaw did this year. So Kershaw, because the question's got to be asked in terms of all the legacy plays, because really with the Dodgers series, other than, you know, updating the Kirk Gibson highlight reel, it's all about Kershaw and his legacy. And as Justin, our producer, points out, he's got a 1.80 career ERA in the World Series against teams that didn't cheat. So how do we put that into the narrative to make sure those get split apart?
That's a very good point there. I think that here's how I look at Kershaw. You know, first of all, he's now 12-12 in his postseason career. His ERA in his last six playoff starts is 3.55. So that's pretty good. You win, you know, you're, I realize with him, would you have rather seen that 12-12 be, you know, 16-8? Sure, obviously, yes. But 12-12 is a respectable postseason number when you consider what you're going up against. And he's now won 12 playoff games, which in the wild card era is third most in the sport after Andy Pettit and Verlander. And Pettit obviously has had mostly great starts. Verlander's had his struggles too. So I think when you're the guy, when you're looked upon, to throw all the big innings. Sometimes there's a fatigue factor, or whether it's struggling to perform in those big moments. Certainly there's been some of that for Kershaw, but I thought tonight the first inning could have gotten away from him, and he was very poised. And I think that was finally having that confidence of just knowing how talented the team was around him. He seemed – the body language room tonight I thought was very good. And again, his postseason numbers the last six times out, a 3.55 ERA. When you're facing the best teams in the sport in those games, that's a pretty good number to have.
You can follow him on Twitter at John Morosi. That is at John Morosi, MLB Network, Fox Sports 1 insider from the World Series. And he is ready for any question you have on Twitter, whether it is about the World Series, whether it's about Michigan playing Little Brown Jug this weekend, or anything random in Italian. He is your guy. JP, as
certamente,
always, buddy.
Certamente. Una buona partita di Lazio questo giorno. Una vittoria contra Borussia Dortmund in la prima ronda della Champions League.
Okay, so if I can translate, that was Michigan wins 48-3, go blue.
Is that? You may say that, but PJ Fleck may take issue with that prediction. That's going to be a tough game for the Maize and Blue there in Minneapolis. And, of course, Michigan State, the big game on Fox for the following weekend. I should be home by then, but, of course, I can't go because of the rules. So I'll be watching that one from home.
Press pass, baby. Press pass.
Hey, take it easy, buddy. We'll talk to you after game two.
Always love catching up. Thanks for everything.
See you, JP. Great.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.